When you need mealtime inspiration, it's worth shopping Kroger, where you'll find over 30,000 mouthwatering choices that excite your inner foodie. And no matter what tasty choice you make, you'll enjoy our everyday low prices, plus extra ways to save, like digital coupons worth over $600 each week. You can also save up to $1 off per gallon at the pump with fuel points. More savings and more inspiring flavors make shopping Kroger worth it every time. Kroger, fresh for everyone. Fuel restrictions apply.
This is the Hans Shot First Podcast.
They don't know it, I'm telling you.
We'll be talking in-depth about common movie moments
from my dead body.
With the mix of all things pop culture along the way.
Yeah, Oscar.
Okay.
Welcome, everyone, to Hans Shot First. I'm Jeff, joined as usual by Scott and Alex. Say hello.
Hello.
Hey.
This week, we're talking about Smokey and the Bandit.
Give me one of them Diablo sandwiches.
Y'all come back now.
He's down.
Garage or
over.
All right, this movie came out in 1977.
Yeah, it did.
Blew every. I don't even know what else came out in 1977. This movie's so good.
Yeah. Directed by Hal Needham. Written by
Needham, the director.
Hal Needham, Robert L. Levy, James Lee Barrett. Starring Burt Reynolds, Sally Field, Jackie Gleason, Jerry Reed, a dog.
Paul Williams, Pat McCormick.
Yeah. All right. Well, right. Alex, this is your pick. What's your history with this movie?
This is one of those movies that I've always known about, but I've never watched it. And then I saw it on Netflix. And I watched it, and it's like, okay, this is pretty good. This might be, you know, I've been trying to find more movies to watch with my kids that are, you know, more like PG, PG-13, a little bit grown up, but still not bad enough that we can't
70s
watch it.
PG.
Yeah. And this one fell right into that area. So I watched it with my boys, and they say they don't like it, but they always sit through it from beginning to end. They're like, yeah, I don't want to watch that. But they'll still watch it. So it's got something going for it.
All right. I'll go next. Same thing. I have always heard of this movie, right? I mean, you kind of, how do you know how you not hear about this movie? But I have never seen it until a few days ago. Also watched it on Netflix. And yeah, it was good to finally get this into my catalog of classics that I've never seen before. And well, we'll talk about it more. Scott
is all about this movie.
Yeah, I'll jump in.
He won't shut up about Smokey and the Bandit.
Yeah, basically the same setup as Jeff here. Yeah, I'd never really watched it. Bits and pieces. Great title for a movie, by the way. regardless of how I might actually feel about the movie itself, this is a great title. I wonder how much of that like actually got things done for this.
Yeah, and I'll just go out and say, always known the movie Smokey and the Bandit. I had no idea who Smokey was or what Smokey was.
They're running away from a bear.
Who the bandit is? Yeah, I had no idea what was going on.
Not gonna lie, I was not sure if this was one of those movies that had an orangutan in it.
That's a Clint Eastwood joint.
No, I know that, but I didn't know if this was like another one because there was that.
Oh,
BJ,
okay.
Because there was BJ and the Bear. I don't know if you remember that.
No, I've heard of that.
Yeah, it was basically
the same
thing.
Was it an
actual bear? Bear was a chimpanzee.
Okay. I didn't know that.
Yeah, or yeah. BJ. I honestly don't know. But one of them was a chimp.
Yeah. Same kind of thing. I know there's Cannonball Run. I've never seen those either. Hell, Wacky Racers is kind of in the same vein. I don't know if we're going to get...
Yeah, a little bit, yeah.
A Laughing Dog. I don't know. So, yeah.
It's a mad, 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 mad world kind of... Yeah.
Mm-hmm. All right. Well, with that, let's get into it. Alex, what's your number 7?
My number seven is they basically got over to the distribution plant. Smokey and what's his face? I forget his friend's name.
Cletus, the snowman.
Cletus. Yeah, snowman.
So not Smokey, Bandit.
That's right. Bandit. My bad. Jeebus H. And Bandit and Snowman get over to the Coors distribution place. There's nobody there because they got there at the butt crack of dawn and they just steal the beer. They just take it.
Yeah.
It's like, oh, here, leave him a note.
Yeah.
Leave him a note. No, because Snowman just goes, oh, the hell with this. And he tosses everything.
That's true.
It's like, all right. They just kept Big and Little Enos's money for buying the beer as a little bonus. I'm like, okay.
Yeah, for those of you who don't know the premise of this movie, they're basically smuggling Coors from Texas to Georgia. And apparently that's a thing. You couldn't take Coors east of the Mississippi, which I didn't know about. Did you guys know this was a thing?
Did so you looked this up, Jeff?
Huh?
You looked this up?
No, the premise of the movie. That's what the movie's about.
Oh, yeah. Oh. I mean,
I didn't say it was a real thing or not. I'm just saying in the movie it's a thing.
Oh, yeah.
And I don't know if it's a real thing or not. I'm assuming it is.
That's basically the plot.
Yeah. Yes.
Yeah. They never really explain why they're doing it.
It's just a bet. They're just a rich Texan or rich Georgian. Making bets with truckers, seeing if they can do it.
Yeah, I guess.
That's it. Yeah, really? No reason.
Yeah, I don't...
Oh, because he's thirsty, dummy.
Yeah, that warm Coors is going to taste good on the...
Well, they didn't have refrigeration back in 77.
That is true.
I just pulled up a quick article. Coors didn't get national distribution until 1986.
So does that mean it was illegal?
Damn.
They weren't licensed to sell.
But what about transport, though?
Well, if he's transported there, and then what? You just going to drink it all?
You can't prove.
I'm not diving into the actual.
I want to get into the.
Yeah, this is a true. Okay. Let's start a true crime podcast about whether in 1977 it was legal to do this.
I mean, I guess they were. I mean, they were bootlegging in Beverly Hills Cop in the beginning with the cigarettes.
There you go.
Yeah, wasn't it because it wasn't passed through customs or something, and they didn't pay the taxes on it or something.
Yeah, like they got it all from the duty free store at the.
It's a lot of cigarettes.
Also, not for nothing. Like going back to the distribution center thing. How long do you think it would take two dudes to load up 400 cases?
I don't know, just as reasonable as a semi driving 150 miles an hour around corners.
Well, you just speed up the camera. Yeah.
I'm also reading here, it was because the beer is not pasteurized and needed to be refrigerated, which could not be guaranteed that far east of the Colorado brewery. Okay. I don't know.
My crews must have paid a lot of money for all the product placement in this movie. Yeah.
So... Anyway.
Anyways.
But yeah, them stealing the beer is pretty...
Yeah.
All right. My number seven, I'll go next. There was a couple scenes when Sally Field, I've already forgot her name, the bride, whatever she is in this.
Frog.
All right. This random shit when she's driving, like, just happens. Like, I didn't understand any part when she was driving. Like... First of all, how she could drive the way she was driving. And, like, I get Burt Reynolds is doing this. She's doing some pretty nice drifting herself. But there's one point where
she's a southern girl.
She watched. She's like, drive. There's a scene where she's driving, like, from left of the screen to the right of the screen. And then just, like, turns around for no reason. And we don't see why she turns around. And then just goes completely the other direction.
She was driving erratically to lose the Smokies.
But there, at that point, there were no Smokies on him. She just did it. Like, it was so freaking random.
Mm-hmm.
And do we ever get an explanation for her of what the hell was going on?
Vaguely.
Like, Yeah,
it's like that plot point was dropped.
She ran away from her wedding. No, that's all the Sheriff Justice. That was his whole thing because she was going to marry his son, but she ran away from. She was a runaway bride from the wedding, so he was chasing her to get her back for a shotgun wedding.
That was 100% sure on that.
No, that was the son. He was wearing the wedding thing in a boutonniere at the start.
Well, I mean, he could have been he could have been a groomsman.
Could have been, but it's him. He was the groom.
He's probably the groom.
Okay, that's what put him on them. But like, never once did he say just like give me the girl or anything like that. It's just he's just after Burt Reynolds at this point.
Yeah, because Bandit's got the girl. But Bandit wasn't even if he said, you know, I just want the bride, you know, whatever. But there was so much disrespect.
Well, he can't let it go. He concocted this whole thing about kidnapping, so like. He had to keep up the charade of
that too. Yeah,
he was going after like he had assumed that she was kidnapped, so there was no point in.
But he doesn't bring it up ever, except the very beginning when he first start when he like finds the guys that are stealing her shit. Whatever. I heard most of this movie was improvised, and so I just like they dropped story points along the way.
Anyways, I believe it.
He's bound to die.
Scott, number five, number seven.
My number seven is just the casual racism and jokes about spousal abuse.
Jesus.
Yeah. On one hand, it's
a honeymooners callback.
Yeah, I was going to say. Yeah. But I don't think that's what they were going for.
It was improvised. That was improvised by him. I saw a little behind the scenes thing on that.
Okay. Well.
He really likes beating women.
Yeah.
Jesus H.
I have more to say about his character, but it was played for laughs. Like him not believing that there was a black sheriff, him talking about punching his wife in the mouth. Mm-hmm. Yeah, just mm-hmm. not funny. Like, and I get the idea wasn't.
I laughed at punching her in the mouth just because.
It's Jackie Gleason.
It was Jackie Gleason. It's a joke. It's not like he's doing it. I chuckled, especially coming from as a Honeymooners fan growing up. But
mm-hmm.
like, the Honeymooners thing is the only like kind of saving grace there. But it just, I don't know. Like, it was just like here's a joke. Like LOL, black people. Like it doesn't. Like, I don't see how that was supposed to be funny. I don't know.
Yeah. Well, it's funny because
it's
villain.
Time, maybe. I don't know.
He's the bad guy. Of course he'd be racist.
They go out of their way to show Snowman is cool with, like, one of the three, like, black people that are in the movie. Like, Burt Reynolds at one point tight. does, like, the... they do the... Not the handshake, but we do like a low five. I don't know. I guess, like you guys said, product of its time. It was cringy.
All right. Alex, number six.
My number six is, and I think we covered a lot of this, but a lot of the characters are pretty one-dimensional. Except for Sally Field, which you get a little bit of a backstory about her being a chorus line dancer, wanting to be one, and then the little romantic scene break that she has with Burt Reynolds. But other than that, everybody is like at face value who they are.
Yeah.
That's it.
Yeah. I mean, there's not, yeah, like Scott mentioned, there's not much plot, there's not much, it's just a... It's basically mm-hmm. the 70s version of the Road War, the Fury Road or something, right? except they don't go back. I don't know. Yeah. It's just we're on the road and
Sally Field's cinematography is not as good, yeah.
Smoking the cigarettes, kicking my ass. All right, my number six what the hell is going on? Oh, this thing, it was good and bad for me. It was always moving, right? This movie like really doesn't stop, which is, I guess, part of its charm. But early on, I was kind of getting a little sick watching it. I don't know if I just wasn't in the right mood for it, or if I just, you know, whatever. But and I feel like you got used to it. But there was a lot of just because it was always moving.
They're pretty much always cornering until like that last stretch of the movie.
Yeah. Mm-hmm. And just so I don't know, there's a part early on I was like, oh, this is rough. This is gonna be rough for me. And eventually I got fine with it, but just had to call it out. Like, I get it, like they're on the road and it's fun, it's supposed to be moving, and I like that, but it was something about the cinematography early on was bugging me, making me physically sick. All right, Scott, number six.
All right, number six is Sally Field is adorable.
Yeah.
It's too bad, like, most of the banter was meh at best between her and Burt Reynolds. I don't know. I guess mileage will vary on this, but I was not getting any real chemistry between the two of them. Like,
no.
So, I guess it's kind of too bad. But yeah, she's super cute. They were smart to stick her, like, just to stick somebody in the car with him. And yeah, she's as good as anybody to kind of play off of him. That's basically it. She's about the only person I liked in this movie. So that's my number six.
I saw on the documentary, like we could talk, I guess, quickly about the casting or the writing of this thing. Like the guy who, I guess, Hal Needham, the director, yeah, writer, came up with this quick shitty script. Jerry Reed, Snowman, he had told him that he was going to be the lead and everything was for him, and then he just threw it at Burt Reynolds, like jokingly kind of thing, and then Burt Reynolds agreed to do it, and then so we had to tell Jerry Reed, good news, bad news, we're gonna get this movie made because, you know, Burt Reynolds is gonna bring in the money and everything. Bad news is you're no longer playing the lead, and he was totally fine with that. Jerry Reed also is he wrote the Eastbound and Down song too. He's a musician and all that stuff.
For me, yeah.
And then it was Burt Reynolds who wanted to bring in Sally Field, and like, no, she's not sexy enough. And he's like, bullshit, blah blah blah. So he stuck his neck out for her. And then same thing with Jackie Gleason. They're just like, you know, it's not a big role, but we think you're perfect for the part. And they didn't think he'd get him, and they got him. So there you go. Alex, number five.
Damn. Burt Reynolds really making this movie happen. Yeah. Damn.
It's
part
of the stash.
Yeah, it sure is. I really liked, I very much enjoyed the scenes where everybody was coming together to help the bandit. You could really tell that he was a famous guy who was friends with everybody, kind of like Ferris Bueller, and everybody wanted to lend him a hand. And it was great, you know, him getting on the horn and people just going out of the way to give him a hand, give him tips.
Yeah, it's kind of fun.
Mm-hmm. All those teenagers is like, oh yeah, let's go get ready for, I forgot what they called it, but they caused like a traffic jam after Bandit went through, so the cops would get stalled.
I will say, I get it. It's, you know, dumb. I mean, you talked about Cannonball Run, but as an adult, like, I want to say, like, fuck almost everybody in this movie. It's just just how many people almost die constantly. Yeah.
Scott, it's a movie.
I know. I couldn't help but be bothered by it. Like,
they're not following the traffic laws.
Oh, they're speeding the whole time? Oh, my gosh.
It was bugging me that they were going 110.
I don't think a single seatbelt was being worn.
I have one of my notes is, what is a seatbelt?
Oh, 77. They killed more people than saved back then. Yeah. Not like today.
God. Anyway.
Yeah. Scott, suspension of disbelief.
No.
Well, Scott, so my number five is something, the line about, God, I forgot what the setup was, but it's something about sitting up high in the trucks, and he goes, how do you think I spot them beavers?
Yeah, that was weird. That whole scene, because they're driving by, that's when they do the weird, like, hide and seek in the convoy. Right. And yeah. Burt Reynolds mm-hmm. says that when she says, like, oh, they sit up so high. And he's like, I gotta smile on the beavers. Like, I kind of get what he was saying, but it was just such a weird, like, time to say it.
It was. It was so fucking mm-hmm. random. Yeah. All right. Well, that's all I got on that one. So back to you, Scott. Yeah. Number five.
It's just trucker jargon.
What if I, stunt I genuinely liked was when they, when the sheriff, Buford T. Justice, or P. Justice, when they drove under the, whatever the fuck that thing was that cut the top of the car off.
Yeah. Yeah.
Cause I was like pulling my collar on that one. Like, oh, cause you could see somebody was still in the car. Like, when they drove it. Yeah. Like I'm sure they set it up so that like the top would come off like relatively cleanly and all that. And maybe some other safety precautions, who knows, but there's still people in the car when they did that shit. I was just like, wow, that's that's hardcore. And I appreciated that, that somebody basically risked their life more so than they normally would, maybe. Yeah.
There was one shot where I think it was he was trying to pass the snowman kind of early in the beginning, and the cop car cut to front too soon. And the back truck T-boned that cop car, and like it cuts, and it had crashed, but not nearly as bad as it would have been. Yeah. I'm wondering if someone really got hurt on some of these. Oof.
I don't doubt it.
I can imagine. Yeah.
Yeah. So speaking of like, not that cars are magic in this. It's like Fast and Furious logic, but there mm-hmm. was a commando moment. This where the car was magically okay. Sure. It was probably multiple. The one that I spotted was the scene where he's being racist to the black sheriff when he knocks the car into the pond. Like, you can see his car when he drives into it. You can see the hood fold up. And then the next scene, it's fine.
Yeah.
We're like, oh, dude, one take.
we're not that's doing all they could afford.
Yeah.
They had to make the movie fast.
Yeah. And then speed it up.
Yeah. Mm-hmm. And speaking of stunts, the one thing I was thinking of, remember we recently did Once Upon a Time in Hollywood, and the kind of the Brad Pitt character was based off of the relationship, the stuntman for Burt Reynolds is what they said. So the whole time I kept thinking like, oh, that's Brad Pitt's character.
Oh, well, like, right. Like, how
loosely based. I mean, it was loosely based on the relationship between Burt Reynolds and his stuntman.
Well, I don't know if stuntman was Hal Needham, the director in this, because Hal Needham was like a super famous stuntman.
Yeah.
Oh, yeah. I think that's who it is. Hal Needham. Yeah, it is. His,
yeah. Okay. IMDb page. He did 109 stunts. Well, movies.
Yeah, legend.
You're right. That's mm-hmm. where the name.
Jeebus, he directed some.
Cannonball Run. That's what I was talking about that earlier.
Yeah. And Cannonball Run 2. Rad. He directed Rad.
Did he do Rad?
Yeah.
Oh, shit.
I know, right?
I take everything I said back. this is a man of vision.
Mm-hmm. Oh, he directed Arnold Schwarzenegger's cowboy movie, The Villain.
Oh, wow. Good on this guy for like parlaying, like breaking every bone in his body to like being a go-to director. A go-to director for like kind of B schlock that would make money.
Mm-hmm.
But yeah, Cliff Booth is based off of Hal Needham. So there you go. I knew he was a stuntman. I didn't put two and two together. He was actually the writer-director, too. Which makes sense why now Burt Reynolds did the movie for him, right? Like, that...
You're right. Yeah.
Everything's making sense now.
It's all coming together.
Yeah.
And then when the hippies came to kill his wife...
Oh, the hippie sheriffs, goddamn, ain't.
That line stuck with me. Like, I just randomly think of that line recently.
Yeah.
Makes me want to watch that.
Is everybody all right?
Well, hippie sheriff, goddamn, ain't.
All right, I forgot where we left off. I think we're out with Scott's five, number so five. Five.
Yeah.
Yeah. Alex, number four.
My number four is, and we've been saying it throughout this whole episode, but it's a simple movie, simple premise, goes from point A to point B, back to point A, because it's got to get back to the rodeo for the Enises, And yeah, but it doesn't need to be complicated. It knows what it is, and they have fun with it. And I love that.
Yeah. No, it's for what it is, it is.
Yeah, they don't try to, it doesn't try to be more than, you know, what it is. A silly car chase movie.
And do we know, I don't, I was going to look this up, I didn't. Is like Dukes of Hazzard, like, kind of based off of the success of this? Like, I don't know, I just see Bootlegging come out? And Cletus and the dog is Flash, like,
Dukes of Hazzard. I know. Get them Duke. I mean, yeah.
It came out in 79. 2 years later.
Roscoe, yeah. Sure. Bro. Mm-hmm. Like, that had to be based off of the Jackie Gleason character. Get them
Duke Wars. And they got Burt Reynolds to play Boss Hoss in the movie, right? Boss Broken Hog. Lizard.
Boss Hog. Yeah.
Yeah.
Get them Duke Boys.
All right.
There it is.
All right, so yeah, my number 4 is The Jump. And this is another reason made me think of Dukes of Hazzard. Just got to jump. Got to get an American car and jump it.
Yeah, and, hell yeah.
And ruin the car, but the next scene, it's driving fine. There are a couple. I didn't really like the baseball field one, or football field, I forgot what it was. That one's fine. But the other one, when it jumped the river, that was pretty cool. I was hoping for a couple more jumps.
That was... Shades. Shades Delta Force.
Yeah.
I was expecting it to pause, then the narrator to come in. And just, I don't know how the Duke boys are going to get out of this one.
They sure stepped in a bucket of Hunter this time.
Duke boys better grow some wings, or at least start flapping their arms.
They sure snapped in a barrel of molasses this time.
All right. The jump was my number 4. So, Scott, what's your number 4?
All right. My number 4 was the raw dedication they had to the hat gag to Jackie Gleason's hat.
Yeah. Honorable mention.
Just get his hand there the whole time. And pretty much I think it was the only laugh I got in the entire movie was when he gets out of the car at one point and the son gets out and then he puts his hand back on the hand again. I gotta respect it. They were like, this is a thing, it's gonna be in every part of the movie. It's good stuff.
Mm-hmm. All right. Alex, number 3.
My number 3 is Burt Reynolds. He's pretty damn charming in this movie.
Is he, though?
I think so.
I think he was. For what he is. Don't think about it, Scott.
Yeah. Flagrant disregard for the law.
He's a man of the people. Here. He's basically Robin Hood.
Yeah. Except instead of money, he gives people beer.
Yeah.
That's great. Way better than Robin Hood.
I have more to say about him later, but I will honestly, I was thinking when I was watching this, like, what Burt Reynolds movies have I seen? Because, like, we're a little too young for Burt Reynolds, right? Like, he wasn't, and I was like, okay, I've seen Boogie Nights.
Yes.
I've seen Mystery Alaska, and...
Nope.
I don't know. Like, I haven't seen many Burt Reynolds movies at all.
Yeah, I haven't seen Deliverance.
And I have seen Deliverance. You're right. So I've seen that.
You're right, Jeff. Like, there was a point where he was like the biggest movie star in the world. Like, right. It was before our time, but yeah.
And so, like, we know who he is, or at least I'll speak for myself. Like, I know who he is, and I've seen him in a couple movies, but I don't really know who he is. And then watching him in this movie, all I could think about was Norm MacDonald on Jeopardy and SNL, because that's who he's playing. He's playing the bandit from Smokey and the Bandit. Like, the red shirt, chewing gum. It's a big hat. Like, that. I was laughing more at that, just because, like, I finally... Like, I knew he was doing Burt Reynolds, but I really didn't know he was doing Burt Reynolds. Like, I don't know. I just...
Yeah.
There was an SNL skit, so not Jeopardy, where they did Dana Carvey doing Johnny Carson on his, like, last, like, episode of The Tonight Show. And he had Norm Macdonald come out as, you know, as Bert. And then Chris Farley comes out as Dom DeLuise. And he starts doing the Dom DeLuise laugh. And they, like, they hit each other with pies. And, like, Chris Farley pisses himself. And I'm not doing it justice. Oh, yeah. It's fucking hilarious.
I know the skit you're talking about now. That's pretty great.
Oh, God. Anyways, just now.
All right, so that was Alex's number three. My number three is, I'm going to go with Jackie Gleason here. This is a total just personal baggage. Watching The Honeymooners with my mom and dad when I was a kid was just like, that's what we did. I always thought he was hilarious there. And this is like the only other time I've seen him. I saw, what's the...
The toy?
No, The Color of Money, but the first one, like the pool, the one with Paul Newman. Okay. He plays like Fats. It's a pool hustler. I think he's just called The Hustler. And I don't even know if that's in color. I don't even know. But this is like, I think, the first time I've seen him in color. I don't know. I just, you know, some of his stuff was funny. Some of it was cringy. I don't know. I'm just saying it's a product of its time. They're in the South. Whatever. That's the character. I just found it hilarious to see Jackie Gleason. And then when that joke about, there's no way you came for me, well, I'm getting punching your mom in the mouth. It's terrible, but it's hilarious at the same time. I'm sorry. Yeah. Might as well have been bang zoom to the moon. So, so Jackie Gleason is my number three. Scott, number three.
We're whalers on the moon.
Yeah. Mm-hmm. Not just a metaphor for beating his wife.
Number three is also Jackie Gleason. He's doing a lot here.
Yeah.
One might argue too much.
I disagree.
Yeah, like, most of this movie's, it seemed clearly ad-libbed. Yeah, it just wasn't landing for me. I don't know what else to say. Yeah, it just, it's just kind of obnoxious, but not entertaining.
I kind of can see that. I'm just, like I said, I'm bringing my personal baggage, so therefore,
right.
I get, but I could see there were times where, like, it's really not that funny, but it's Jackie Gleason, so.
So, yeah, maybe there was like at a point where there was like a lot of novelty to see him and do that. But
right.
Anyways, that was my number three. It was not improving the movie for me. So.
All right. Alex, number two.
My number two is all the car chases. All the car stuff is awesome. I mean, it's, you know, nowadays they still have like really cool car stunts and everything, and stunt drivers are doing some amazing things that they hadn't done in the 70s. But there's some camera trickery and some CGI and compositing that's used to keep the driver safe, which I completely understand and I'm for. Don't get me wrong. I like all that stuff. It keeps stunt drivers alive so they can keep doing what they're doing. But man, back in the 70s, doing car chases like this, people almost getting their heads ripped off and then going, was that shot okay? Should I do it again? It's like, that's nuts. And all the car chases are here. The bandit, you know, running rings around all the Smokies and everything, especially towards the end. That was awesome. I loved it.
Yeah.
And my kid's favorite part was when Sally Field flipped off that cop.
I bet.
That was great. He's like, oh my gosh, Dad, did you see that? She gave him the finger.
She gave him the finger.
Yep.
All right. My number two is all the CB chatter. I don't know what they're saying, but it's cool. Especially at one point when Snowman was saying a bunch of stuff kind of toward the end. And I'd understand they had a system for changing channels, but I really didn't see that come into play, or I really didn't know what was going on. I don't even know how CB radios work, to be honest with you.
Yeah, I don't think it actually came into play. Yeah, they bring it up like a couple times, but yeah, they don't.
Yeah. But anyway, I just like listening to the CB chatter. It's fun. Nicknames and chart. Yeah, we're going to put you in the nest, or the whatever they said when you spot them beavers, whatever. Just all that stuff.
In the rocking chair.
Rocking chair. There you go.
Yeah.
I thought he was going to go under one of the trucks, like in Christmas Vacation.
Christmas Vacation.
I was kind of disappointed when that didn't happen.
So yeah, CB Chatter. So my number two, Scott.
My number two is, as has already been brought up by Alex at least, is that there's barely a plot here.
Yeah.
There's barely enough to string together like a whole movie here. And you could argue that there really isn't. I guess they get to the end of their, you know, they reach their goal and then take off again. I was expecting the movie to like end right there when they get in the Cadillac. And the cops just completely ignore them when they drive off. but God, just so bare bones. I guess even the diner scene was ad-libbed or was like added in like at the last minute, according to the trivia. It was Jackie Gleason's idea. Just barely like any reason to like stop to do anything. Like, Jeff, you mentioned the movie, like, never stopped, except for that one point where they stopped to have, like, the romantic interlude, and they have the weird scene where, like, he has to get, where Snowman gets in the fight with the bikers, which turns out to, like, not matter at all.
No.
I was expecting at that point, like, oh, like, Sally Fields is going to have to drive, like, one of those vehicles, right? to get this done. Nope. Nah. Like, he barely had a shiner by the time they get to the speedway or whatever. I can only imagine how much coke was on the set here. Like we talked about this like for Blues Brothers too. Like,
oof, Jesus.
It just had to be like like Scarface, like his like private desk like amounts just off of craft services. Like,
I was just about to say, Scott, sometimes you just gotta do a lot of cocaine and film a movie.
Yeah, hope for the best. Mm-hmm. The speeding up in real life, not just the camera.
Yep.
It's again, product of its time. I can't remember us watching or reviewing a movie on this podcast that had less of a plot than this. I don't know. Does anything come to mind to either one of you?
Like I said, the thing that comes to mind is Fury Road. There's not much of a plot there either. But everything you said has been 100% true, but that doesn't make it not entertaining. I guess that's the one thing you
said. No, I'm not. Right? Exactly. I'm not saying that precludes it, you know, from being entertaining. But
yeah.
Yeah, I'm arguing that Fury Road did have like more going for it than this too.
I do too, yeah. Just because it's. But I'm just saying that's the only thing I could think of as far as just we're on the road and we're driving this way and then what the fuck, let's just turn around and go back.
I don't know. I like maybe the raid, like the raid redemption.
Yeah,
there was like not much going on there either. The thing that they get in, get out, and they had the thing between the brothers, like, and then they had the one like protecting like the injured guy. Like, anyway, mm-hmm. a lot of coke. It was done on the set of this movie. I'm guaranteeing it.
All right. Well, on to our number ones, Alex.
Sheriff Buford P. Justice. I love Jackie Gleason in this role. He was great. He was a son of a bitch that you wanted to hate. But him and his dumb son, he just kept failing and everything. And he didn't realize Bandit was under his nose pretty much the whole time. Oh, I loved it.
I do like the way you said some bitch.
Yes, some bitch. What we got here is a clear disregard for the law. Him and his voice. That was great.
Yeah, that came from... That was on the documentary that I saw that...
Was that based on Cool Hand Luke?
No, I thought it was like Burt Reynolds, and he was talking to him. He goes, your dad was a trucker or something like that, or from the South. He said, yeah. And he goes, anything from that? He goes, well, he didn't say son of a bitch. He said some bitch. And that's Jackie Gleason, like, used that.
Oh, I was like saying, that. Like, the what we have here.
Oh, that part, yeah.
Yeah, yeah.
That's what I thought when first we heard. Yeah, you're right. All right, anything else, Alex, on Jackie?
Nope, that's it.
All right. My number one is Burt Reynolds, as Alex said. He's pretty charming in this movie. I already mentioned the Norm MacDonald stuff. the one thing that probably shouldn't work, but once again, it worked for me in this movie, was the fourth wall breaking. And I just think it happened It happened early enough in the movie. So you're like, okay, this is the kind of movie we're on. We're just audience. We're having fun here. It's just you could do coke with the audience too, if you want. I don't know. Just having
a good time. Join us.
Yeah. So I really dug it. There's sometimes in movies that it only happens once and it's kind of weird and out of place. But and this one was really good. I think this is the... If I'm sure we've done fourth wall breaking in the past, and if we had seen this, I would have put this in a list because I really liked it here. It's right up there with like the end of Superman or something. I just really dug it. So yeah, Burt Reynolds, and then later on the fourth wall breaking. That sounds like the fourth wall breaking. Never mind. Scott, number one.
Number one is all the stunt driving, as Alex alluded to. Yeah, still like a lot of fun. To see all the cars constantly peeling around and you know, the again, try not to think about it. I feel like there should have been like at least one or two cops that kind of hang with them just to spice things up, but they're all just wildly incompetent.
Yeah.
Which, you know, whatever. I almost want to look this up. The one motorcycle cop that follows them has patrol like on the front of his like windshield or windscreen. What I don't even know what you'd call it on a motorcycle.
Yeah, windshield. Uh-huh. I guess. Yeah.
Like, would that have been a thing? Like,
I don't know.
I don't know. It seemed weird to me.
I'm going to say yes.
Should have been backwards. I don't know.
It's only for amber lances.
Amber lances. But anyways, yeah, I did enjoy all the stunt driving. The Trans Am is a cool car.
Yeah, I know. My dad owned a Camaro, so I was always on the Camaro side. But watching this movie, I don't know.
Yeah,
I might switch sides. The Trans Am is awesome.
Not that I'm necessarily a car guy, but it is a pretty sweet car. And they get the most out of it in this movie. Although I do wonder if they're going 110 miles an hour, like how Burt Reynolds' hat stayed on.
He stapled it on, just like it on. Yeah. Indiana Jones.
Stapled it to his tube. Yeah.
Just real quick, fourth wall breaking. Something just popped in my head. Do you remember in Death Proof, right after Russell kills the first girl... after the bar, and then he chases down the other girls, he pulls up on right in front of the camera and he looks at the camera and smiles, and then he goes off and he does it. I'm wondering, he got to have stole that from this, right? That's all he does is steal moments from movies.
That's a good catch right there.
Maybe we'd have to compare.
Yeah.
I bet that's it.
Yeah.
And I bet Hal Needham is a stuntman at some point in that movie too. Just
Well, he might have been doing like the Vanishing Point stuff. Yeah, we don't know.
Yeah.
To look that up.
Any honorable mentions?
Yeah. So, the bell bottoms were kicking my ass.
70s.
Yeah, yeah. Probably with time. The other thing that was really, really kicking my ass was the ADR.
Yeah, that's my honorable mention.
Yeah. Some of the most, I'll let you guys talk about it, but it was egregious.
No, I'm just going to say that. It was just annoying. Sally Field a lot of the time. It was like...
Well, the car Trans Am is very loud.
Yeah.
The top was down. Off, I should say.
Anything else?
Oh, yeah. He throws down... So he buys two cheeseburgers and an iced tea. And he asks the waitress how much that'll be. And she says $1.50. Like... That has to be bullshit for even like 1970, whatever this was.
Oh, not in the South in 77. Whew. I don't know. Maybe $20 was a lot of money when my dad was a kid.
I guess so. Jesus.
I never believed him.
$1.50 for two hamburgers and a drink.
Yeah.
My God.
What a time to be alive.
Mother of God.
Right. So do you know why they call the cops the Smokies?
Because they'll smoke you if you make a wrong move.
No, at one point he calls them a gumball machine. That I think I understood. But yeah, the Smokies, not so much.
Yeah, gumball, so apparently, I finally looked it up because I kept forgetting to look it up. It's because of the hat looks like Smokey the Bear. The hat they wore in that part.
Okay. That makes more sense.
Yeah.
What's the gumball machine thing?
Because I think it had the siren or the light on the top.
Oh, okay. Made it look like that makes sense, too. Yeah, okay.
I'm just guessing there, though. I don't know. Yeah. All that chucker lingo. It's funny, like, they try to make Sally Field kind of, like, enamored of this trucker world, but she basically learns everything there is to know in, like, that one trip they have. Like, there's really nothing more to it than...
That's all it is.
Yeah.
Yeah.
All right, well, it's time to rate it. As usual, we rate on a scale of 1 to 7, 1 being garbage, 7 being perfection. Alex, what do you give this movie?
For me, this is a solid 5. It's a lot of fun. I probably wouldn't buy this on 4K Blu-ray, but if I see the DVD for $5, I'll pick it up.
All right, I agree. 5 for me as well. I enjoyed it, even though it was a little rough at the beginning.
Mm-hmm.
I could see, I probably wouldn't buy it, but I could see if this was on cable or something, I would probably watch it. It's a background show. And I could see why it was popular
back in the day.
Scott?
3. I just...
Wow.
Was not... just not really feeling it. Like, there's things, again, I appreciated about the movie. But, yeah, I just wasn't that into it.
The disregard for the flagrant disregard of laws. But you love the fast movies.
Not all of them.
Well, yeah, and there's like a million of them.
And I don't know that I'd necessarily rate most of them higher than this one.
Wow. So. Well, yeah. No, I could see that.
All right. Well, it's time for a crossover topic. What is that, Alex?
Our top 5 smugglers / bootleggers.
All right. Well, what's number 5?
Yeah, my number 5 is me when I'm on the ride, Smuggler's Run at Disneyland. I am the greatest smuggler. If I get a good team of random strangers on the ride. Top score.
Smuggle my vomit from not spilling all over the place. This makes sense.
All right. All right, to get up from that.
Yeah.
My number 5 is, it's a cheat, but I got to go with George Costanza just because of that one episode where he's a bootlegger.
Oh,
so stupid.
Ours is similar.
So there it is. There's an episode where he's trying to be the bad guy to get with the girl and... Yes, what he does. He's wearing like a Leatherman jacket. I'm a bootlegger.
Yeah, his dad's GTO. Man, that's a fucking awesome car.
Yeah. There it is. George Costanza, number 5. Scott.
My number 5 is all the people involved with the Red Sea Diving Resort. If you guys have ever seen this movie. It was somewhat recent. Nope. Based on true events where these Israeli operatives go down to, oh God, I forgot the place, but it's beachside town, but basically around like the Middle East,
the Jersey Shore,
and they basically rescue a bunch of Jewish like nationals. They basically smuggle them out under the guise of running this resort, this diving resort on the coast. It's pretty interesting.
Cool. All
right.
Yeah.
Alex, number 4.
My number 4 is also from Seinfeld, But mine isn't George Costanza, because technically he didn't actually do any bootlegging. He got caught. No. But Jerry Seinfeld actually did do some bootlegging. And yeah, he got a little bit too full of himself after that. So he only did it that one time.
You're talking about the recording the movies?
Yeah.
Yeah, okay.
The actual bootlegging.
Yeah. All right. My number four, I'm having a really hard time deciding between these two. Whatever. Since it's been on my mind because I just watched season two again, I'm going to go with The Greeks and The Wire.
I thought you were going to say from in the Trojan Horse.
Smuggling stuff in the city, yeah. Yeah.
But season two of The Wire is basically about the port, Baltimore port, and the longshoremen and everything. But there's these Greeks that are kind of behind the scenes, and they're... One of them's a union leader, and the other ones are blah, blah, blah. Well, he's not the Greek. But anyway, it's good stuff. Watch it.
They're doing shoremen to work.
Scott, number four.
Number four is Meg Ryan from French Kiss smuggling some diamonds for Kevin Kline in the movie. And
I have never seen that.
She's largely unaware of it the whole time. But yeah, it's a cute movie. They're good together. Unbeknownst smuggling. Right. Also, yeah. For the record, I do not have any bootleggers on my list. I don't know about you guys.
Yeah, because that just turned into like the Untouchables and mob movies.
Yeah.
When I tried to look for some.
Yeah. Anyway, let's see what Jeff says.
Yeah. I don't know. They're kind of both. Well, we'll see. Alex, number three.
My number three is Red from Shawshank Redemption. He'd always smuggle in contraband. So,
his prison Andy pouch.
Dufresne. Yeah. Andy Dufresne could escape. Helped him out.
Not bad. That's a good one. I like that. All right. My number three is Sir Davos Seaworth from Game of Thrones.
Okay. The Onion Knights.
Onion Knights. Smuggling onions. Those aren't onions in his pants.
Hey-o. Oh,
those aren't balls. Those are his onions. And then his fingers were removed. Anyway, Davos. Lots of smugglers in that show. Scott, number three.
All right. Number three is Henry Hill from Goodfellas. And just basically smuggling drugs.
Yeah.
He gets his babysitter to do it. And everything goes sideways because she needs a lucky hat. And
always wanted to be a gangster.
Yeah. Being a gangster devolves into being a drug dealer. But there you go.
Mm-hmm. All right. Alex, number two.
My number two, and it's the only video game on my list, is Elite Dangerous. Have you guys played this?
Nope. I have not.
Well, it's a big open world spaceship game, and you can, you know, pretty much pick up whatever job you want, but one of them is sneaking contraband into different space stations. And it's a pretty sophisticated simulator if you have the control set up for it. So you've got to align your ship to the slot of the space station and then zoom in as fast as possible and then turn on the heat sinks so that they don't scan your cargo while you're going into the space station. And then after you get in through the scanners, you've got to pretty much let out all your heat so that it doesn't destroy your engine. And then stop really fast and then find your place to land. So it's very intricate and very entertaining. So I recommend it.
All right.
Be a smuggler in Elite Dangerous.
I guarantee you I will never play that.
Not with that attitude. Huh.
Yeah.
My number two, has already been mentioned today, would be the Dukes from the Dukes of Hazzard. There it is. Didn't do any harm.
Never meaning the harm.
So this was one of my favorite shows as a kid growing up. I really haven't seen it in like 40 years, but I'm keeping it on there. Dukes of Hazzard.
Them Duke boys really fell in a waiting pool of petroleum this time.
All right, Scott, number two.
Okay. Number two is, you could say most of the crew of the Firefly, but specifically I have Malcolm Reynolds from the titular Firefly. They mostly smuggled on that show. That was their gig.
Yeah.
Yeah, that's honorable good. Mention.
Food, only cattle.
Yes. Wobbly-headed dolls. Yes.
Yeah. Yeah, that's right.
All right. Alec, what's your number one?
My number one is Jackie Brown. Jackie Brown smuggling drugs for a while until she got caught, and then she turned the tables on everybody.
She did. Good call.
That's what makes her the best in my book. Yeah.
And then,
all right. Well,
and then Cherry. I'm gonna say Don Cherry, but I forget his first name. That movie.
Don Cherry.
Then he became a terrorist and hijacked a flight out of Greece. Anyways.
Oh, I know what you're trying. You're doing a Delta Force joke there. All right, number one, Han Solo, of course. Double crossing, no good swindler.
Yep. Mm-hmm.
Smuggling spice, whatever else he was smuggling. Who knows?
And everything nice.
12 parsecs.
There it is. Han Solo. Easiest one for me so far. Scott, what's your number one?
It's also Han Solo. It's a good thing we found out how he got his name, too. Let me tell you what. I'm glad.
Solo.
All right. My only not honorable mention, besides Malcolm Reynolds, was I had Nucky Thompson from Boardwalk Empire. Never finished the show, though, so didn't really do that one. Any from you guys?
I was trying to think of Simpsons. So the Beer Baron. But he was more, I guess he was a bootlegger, huh?
Yeah. He was. Yeah. Damn it. I should have put him
on. That should be on the list. Yeah, I thought of that just now. Shit. Mm-hmm. I'll get you, Beer Baron. No, you won't.
Yes, I will.
Whoa.
Top 10
Simpsons moments was the...
Yeah.
When the,
so fucking good.
The boiler blows up. He's on the front lawn. Boo.
There's what's-his-face from RRR. He smuggled guns back to the Freedom Fighters.
Okay.
He tried to.
Eventually, yeah, he tried to.
All right. I guess that's it. It
turned out he was a demigod, so he didn't need him after that.
Just need a bow and arrow and just go full Rambo. Yeah,
fuck yeah.
Just right on his other demigod's shoulders.
Yeah. Invincible.
All like
Mecha Shiva.
All right, it's time for Alex Knows Sports.
I'm Alex, and I like sports.
Sports ball?
So, from the Cincinnati Reds, L.A. De La Cruz got a bat check. Not because it could have potentially been corked, but because he's got, it looks like a decoration on the bottom, the pommel of the bat. And then I guess the opposing team like flagged it. They wanted to check it. Is there like a performance advantage to putting something in the bottom of the bat?
Like fuck face?
Was it like a Superman logo? I there are rules, but then you see people like slather on pine tar. So I don't know these days. And also, I've seen some weird shit with bats recently where people have like square knobs or like barely knobs at all at the bottom of the bat. And I guess that's legal. There's also, you could have that little divot, I guess, on the top of the bat, but some people don't. Like, yeah. Again, I'm unclear on what the exact regulations are for bats. They can't be metal.
Yeah,
I know that.
Yeah, not aluminum.
Yeah. I'm assuming it's Alex from what you're just how you're describing it. It could be something considered a distraction for the pitcher. I mean, there's all sorts of weird rules about it. You can't distract the batter's eye and you can't distract the pitcher's eye. So like if it's kind of shiny or something, that could make, if he's doing a little, like a Gary Sheffield little that twang.
Reflective.
Yeah. I don't know. I don't really know the story on it.
But. From the pictures here that I'm seeing, it seems just like white, but it's matte. It's not reflective at all. From what I can tell, anyways. But I think it was a non-issue. The ref looked at it and said, play on. So
okay.
I'm just trying to get him disqualified, I guess.
Alex, do you know why they don't use aluminum bats?
Because they're too powerful.
Yeah, they're pretty much.
Yeah, they're too strong. That's why they only use them in college.
I think,
right?
I think
they still use them in college ball?
They still use them in college ball. I think they would allow it, but somebody would die.
Somebody would be
fucking dead.
Because the pitcher would get a comeback.
Yeah, and it would be a little too fast. Yeah, yeah.
And the home run records would shatter.
Yes, yes.
Mm-hmm.
Offense would shoot up for sure.
I still think in the home run derby, they should, like, maybe not the entire time, but like you should be able to power up and just like for this.
It's like the money ball and like 3-point competition in the NBA. It's like,
Or I don't know if you remember Super Baseball Stars, the arcade version, where you could power up once during an at bat or whatever, and you got a giant bat. It'd be something like that.
That's right. The guy that has the worst hitting record, they can just invite him to the home run derby and then just have him have the aluminum bat the whole time.
They should let him use Fungos.
Yeah.
What are Fungos?
It's like a weird, like, they do something to a bat that basically lets you, like crush a baseball, like, without having to swing your hand.
I see.
It's like a cork bat. Yeah, it's elongated barrel and things like that. It's just basically a juiced bat. But like that allows like old coaches to hit long fly balls to their outfielders.
I see.
It's like a practice tool. But yeah.
Okay, these are long.
Yeah.
The
canoe oars.
Jeff made a fungo bat out of a tree that got struck by lightning.
Wonder Bat.
Wonder Fungo. Yeah.
All right, it's time for Neem News.
Yeah.
So, yeah, not a lot for me today. I just want to say I finished up the Arnie documentary, Arnold. We already talked a little bit about it.
I think it started.
Definitely worth a watch. He's just a very compelling person, character. You know, I'm sure a lot of it is editing and music and stuff, but he does genuinely to seem to be a good storyteller. You know, occasionally he'll do like accents. He's actually really good at doing accents, surprisingly. He'll do that.
Wait, what if he came forward like on his like deathbed and he just goes, "It'll be a pity I have to leave this world."
Oh man, that'd be good.
That's so bitch, he got us.
Just a fascinating character. Just all the kind of ups and downs. Like the downs, just basically him kind of being shitty. Most of his downs. Mm-hmm. he just comes off as somebody who doesn't seem like a bad guy. He kind of leaves you a little motivated. You know, his message isn't all wrapped up in kind of the narcissism that you would think it would be. He actually does come off as a little down to earth on some things. It's also just chock full of Arnold bullshit. So it's like, it's like fun to watch. Like, yeah, like at one point they do talk about the villain and stuff like that. Like they're talking about all the movies he's making. And, there was a great anecdote. I forgot if I was talking about this last week, but at the risk of spoiling something, he's talking about on Terminator, how he goes up to James Cameron and like says basically like, oh, I think I should say the line this way. And Cameron says, like, are you the fucking writer? Like, no? Okay, then shut the fuck up and get back to the set. Like just them going out. And then it turned out that, like, Arnold was right about, like, the line and stuff. And, you know, just it was just funny to think if there would be a point in Arnold's career where, like, somebody on set would have told him to shut the fuck up. Like, is interesting to me. Yeah. Maybe James Cameron still would.
I don't know. He probably still would.
Yeah.
The one thing I got out of that, in which it came too late, because I've seen the first two, I haven't seen the third one yet, and this came like just a little too late during True Lies. The reason he made True Lies, I didn't realize that was because after a couple of his movies, that's when he had like his first heart attack or his heart surgery that went like really bad, and like he couldn't get insured and couldn't get movies for a while.
Yeah, that's what how the documentary presents it, and then he did. Yeah. But there was also like Last Action Hero bombed.
Yeah,
and so he was like,
maybe
really
that's what it was.
He was really looking to like figure out like what would get him like back on top again. Right. Again, so it's really script. Too bad. Like, people just didn't get. Maybe it would have been like a mega blockbuster, but yeah, I don't think people really appreciated what was going on in that movie.
At any rate, it was that he was desperate in his career, and so that's why he went to Cameron with True Lies to kind of help him out. And Cameron happened to be looking just to do a kind of action movie at the time, and it worked out. But I didn't really know that.
Yeah, so
that's interesting.
That's cool. Yeah.
I would have liked to have seen, like, I would say, like, Sly's in it a little bit. I would like to have seen more of Sly. Like, just to kind of that back and forth, like, that sort of rivalry they had, like, on screen stuff. Like, or off screen, I should say.
It was good competition that got us these movies, right?
Yeah, that's what Arnie basically said. Like, he's like, I always needed somebody to like push me, and Sly was that guy. And it's crazy, like there's nobody that's like quite reached the heights of those two, right? Like, as far as action movie stars, at least not in the West. Like,
yeah,
maybe you consider like in China, people like Jackie that's Chan true. And
Jackie
like,
Chan,
like Jet Li,
yeah. And,
people like that, but yeah. Donnie Yen, but like, yeah,
I mean, the Rock's the closest thing we have,
yeah.
To that
I think
now,
that the Rock's really insane. Like come close. I mean, you had those other people around the same time as them, that obviously didn't reach quite the same. Like, yeah, I can't say some of my Keanu has done it. I love the John Wick movies, but like, it's just kind of John Wick for him, you know. I mean, we had the Matrix too, I guess.
Speed, he's done a lot too, but
yeah,
it's just different. It's not,
yeah, it's, yes. Yeah, not quite the same. Like, he's not like that same, the same kind of action star, I guess. Like, just larger than life kind of thing. But,
well, it's also a project of its time too. Like, they don't make those movies anymore.
That's
like,
true.
I don't know.
Yeah,
is it, it's not,
yeah, mm-hmm. That's true. Yeah,
muscles,
and, yeah,
muscles,
it's a different kind of movie. Yeah, like, just that, you know, they talk about like Die Hard, like, ushered in kind of a new era of like what the heroes, like Hollywood heroes, should be. I mean, MCU has done more to kind of bring that back, I think, than a lot of like other action movies, tentpole stuff. But again, no one's really quite like gonna have that legacy, at least as an action star.
Yeah. Brian Bosworth got close.
Yeah, very close.
Yep.
Shit, there's still
the closest we do have, I think, is The Rock and maybe what's his face from the Fast and Furious movies, right? Those are only two action stars we really have now, right?
Vin Diesel has like, yeah, he has traded on being like the kind of bulky, mumbly. Vin Diesel has more to thank Sly for than anybody else, maybe, because he's basically doing like a low wattage Sylvester Stallone and like most of his career. Anyway, like, I don't want to go too much more about this. But this is our heyday. Like, this is the stuff we grew up on. So it's fun for me to talk and think about. But yeah, that's really all I wanted to go over. I have not watched the second episode of Secret Invasion yet. It was holiday weekend. Not that I had a ton going on, but like, I was doing a couple other things, so I didn't get around to stuff like that. But that's it for me. I played a little bit more of Final Fantasy 16. I'll review that more when I get into it, maybe. But that's basically it. Alex, anything you want to go over?
Yep. Recently, I watched Flamin' Hot, the biopic of the guy that invented the Flamin' Hot Cheetos. It's great. I didn't know, not until the credits, that I saw that Eva Longoria was the director of the movie, and she did a fantastic job. The movie's great. It's funny. It's a poignant, a real uplifter. And some of the stuff of his early life, whew, it's kind of hit way too close to home. So I was like, whew. I had to calm myself down a bit.
So let me ask you something, Alex. You seem to enjoy it. Like, I feel like...
Cheetos? Yeah, I love them.
I just love hot Cheetos.
That made me go crazy.
I feel like people gave a pass to the Nike movie that just came out. As far as like product placement goes.
Right.
Is it safe to do that with this other movie, or does it feel like, oh, it's like Flamin' Hot Cheeto. Like, this is just more product placement. They're just capitalizing on it.
It is, but there's a real, the movie still does have a lot of heart, and maybe I'm biased because I am Latino. My family comes from Mexico and everything. And a lot of it was, mirrored my own experiences in growing up and my parents. So, it really hit home for me anyways, but I still thought it was a very good movie. Funny at parts, a little bit, maybe a little bit too schmaltzy, too silly at times. The youngest kid that they have in the movie, maybe they used him a bit too much, a bit too cute, but, it was still a good movie. I would still recommend.
Okay.
And, speaking of the Nike movie, I watched Red Letter Media when they were just spitballing some stuff, and they mentioned that, like, and this is, I think, why I wasn't interested in the movie. It's like they try to bill it as, I don't know if you guys have you guys seen it?
No.
Okay. Which one?
The Nike movie.
What's called, like, Air.
The Air Jordans.
Yeah, I've seen it.
How they're trying to make it like an underdog story about how Nike is going to get the shoe made, but Nike was like still the number three shoe company, so they're still a $1 billion company, tried to make it to number one. It's like, kind of not seeing this as a real underdog story since you're already billionaires, but what do I know?
Yeah, I mean, they don't really hide that in the movie. It's just like, yeah, we're number one in track and field, we're number one in this, but we're dead last in basketball.
Yeah,
I don't want to be basketball. I mean, Ben Affleck's character is the CEO and he's super rich, he's just hippie and everything. And
so, right. But yeah, that's kind of what turns me off about the movie as well. It's like, I don't care. Rich people get more money. Great. I don't want to see that movie.
I mean, once again,
it's an entertaining story. But yeah, at the end, you're just watching a story about how this $1 billion company made more millions of dollars and billions of dollars. Like, it's totally understandable. But like, whatever. Like, if you like the shoes as a kid, I guess you just want to see how your money and you getting shot in the face for them made this other guy really rich.
Yeah. It was all worth it. But yeah, Flamin' Hot. If you're a fan of Cheetos, if you're a fan of real underdog stories, then watch it.
You mentioned Eva Longoria. I just found out that she's like one of the big producers behind the John Wick movies in the first place. Like, she stuck her, like she, once again, this movie was made by a stunt man. He was Keanu Reeves' stunt guy all this time. So it's very similar to Smokey and the Bandit. And that's when they got him in the movie and they did all this. But people kept balking at making the movie. And at the end, like, money people kept falling out. And I guess she was a producer, but she kept putting in more money. And I guess she's probably, I'm hoping she's at least laughing her way to the bank. Because now there's like four or five of these movies and...
she's making some moves.
Yeah. And she's no longer with that Tony Parker, so that's great.
What a fucking douchebag that guy is. And I don't just say that because he played for the Spurs.
Wait, is he an actual D-bag or no?
Well, he cheated on her with his teammate's wife.
Oh, I didn't know any of that. I was just I was making a joke because he was a Spur. That was the only reason.
Double down on it. But no, it was a whole thing. It was
I didn't know. Brent, oh, they'd F him even more.
It was like Brent Berry or somebody's wife, like it was like his teammate's wife. Like that's how shitty that guy was. Like it wasn't just like he had an affair with somebody else. Like a guy on his own team. Like just, anyway, yeah, fuck that guy.
Idiot.
Stupid French face. Anyways.
French face.
He's French.
Okay. Yeah.
Tony Parker.
Yep. That's it for me.
All right. Jeff, anything else?
A couple things. I have not seen the Marvel stuff. I saw the first hour and change minutes of the new Indiana Jones movie.
Wait, how did... what happened?
It was awful. No, it wasn't awful. Laura and I went out and saw it the other night, and I was sick.
Just made you want to.
No, that movie made you sick.
To be honest, I was not groaning yet during the movie, so okay. I will see it when it comes out on video. But like, yeah, it was all right. That's all I could say about that. The movie's still on, so I won't say anything else more there. Okay. But I could say it was started off better than the beginning of Crystal Skull. Yeah. And then this is kind of leading into our next week's episode. I've been just fascinated by this, the Titan submersible that...
Ocean Gate
and all that.
Yeah. not a dumb spin by the media. It's actually what's called Ocean Gate.
Yeah. Ocean Gate Gate.
Gate.
Yeah. But just more about like, you know, everyone was referring to James Cameron. I'm like, okay, well, yeah, he made Titanic and he made The Abyss. But like, I knew he was into it. I didn't know how into it. Like, he's gone like four times deeper. But like four times deeper than what the Titanic went. Like the thing that those guys did was like nothing compared to what it. He's been to the deepest part of the entire ocean, the deepest part of the Marianas Trench or whatever. Like him. He built this thing he privately funded engineers to build his submersible and everything. And I never knew he did all this. So
I've been watching this. He's smart enough to be like, will this like implode? And people told him no.
So we should probably engineer it some more. Okay.
Well, he's talked about how the stuff that Ocean Gate used was whatever. I don't get all the details there, but just his journey into all this stuff is crazy. And like I said, he went like this thing is like 2.5 miles down where the Titanic is and where the submersible imploded. He went down like 7 miles.
That's ridiculous.
And it's just insane. He got to the bottom where there was like no life, like pretty deep. You see weird life and you see weirder life. Then he got to the point where it was like, nah, dog, nothing's down there.
He just gets crushed.
So
was he looking for Michael Bean?
Yeah. He even says it like as he's going, he's drifting down. He's like, I've now gone further than, but I forgot Bud's whatever his last name in my movie, The Abyss. I've now gone further than this. And he keeps like mentioning his movies as he goes down. It's pretty interesting. And then he does, when he gets to the bottom, he says some statement and it's like kind of lame. And he's like, well, I had that drawn up a lot better in my head than what I was going to say. Cause it's almost the same as like Buzz Aldrin, right? Neil Armstrong. Yeah. You're like, well, that could have been said better, but anyway, I'll talk more about that next week.
Like that tip doesn't affect your thinking at all. Like your cognitive ability. Yeah.
Oh, yeah. I mean, I think everything's pressurized the right way. It probably wasn't, but just look for it on YouTube because it's on. It was a thing he put out in theaters on 3D screens, but now it's on YouTube for free. Just like look,
that's right.
Cameron Challenge okay. Deep, Challenger Deep, or something, and it's pretty cool.
Is that where he found the bar and he just raised it? James Cameron does what James Cameron does because he's James Cameron.
Yeah, basically. That's all I got.
All right. Sounds like we're good.
All right. Thanks for listening, everybody.
Yeah. Time to get me a Diablo sandwich.
He's bound and down.
We at Hans Shot First would like to thank you for listening and supporting the podcast. We would love to hear from you, so feel free to contact us on Facebook and Twitter at Hans Shot First. Also, please leave us a review on iTunes. Reviews are greatly appreciated and help us get more exposure. Once again, thanks for listening and supporting the podcast.